For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Heat Nation, welcome into Believe in Miami Heat for another week. I'm your host, Joey Levin, joined, as always, by the two-time NBA champ, Heat legend, Norris Cole. Norris, where are you today? Are you Lithuania, France, where are we at? Where are we at, bro?
Right now, I'm in Le Mans, France. Right now, we have a away game in the French league. So I'm in Le Mans, France right now.
Now, let me ask you this. Are you doing as well as the Heat are doing right now? Because our Heat are rolling right now.
The Heat are on fire. There's not many teams in the world doing what the Heat are doing right now.
That's pretty true. And we're going to get way into that this episode. There is so much to get into. Absolutely. We have to talk about what I think Heat Twitter is calling. They're trying to figure out what to call it. Is it hashtag GymVP or is it MV3? Yeah. Like, what's the campaign? And we're going to talk about it because it might be that time to start getting on that train for Jimmy, because Jimmy's having one of the best seasons of his career, and this defense just keeps on rolling.
We definitely want to give Jimmy his flowers. I don't want to talk about the MVP stuff yet, but he's definitely our MVP down in Dade County right now, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And I personally, I know you're going to love this part. When we get later into the show, when we get down to it, I'm going to have to give a player on the Heat, I'm going to have to give him his props, even though every week I try to figure out a way not to give him his props. We're going to have to get into Kelly O. We're going to have to talk about it. And I have good things to say about Kelly O this week. And I know you're going to be happy to hear that.
Yeah, man. I'm happy just for Kelly O so that we can kind of give him a break.
Yeah. I think the way he's played, particularly over these past four games when Bam's been out, which we'll get into, I think he's probably saved his spot on the Miami Heat roster as we're recording this on March 15th, 10 days away from trade deadline, because there are some very interesting names now firmly available because they've basically been benched by their teams and made agreements that they will not play until they find a new home. So we're going to get into all of that.
But you don't see.
Yeah, we will see. But first, let's talk about our people. We got to do it every week. Our guys over at BetOnline, betonline.ag. It's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. The second half of the NBA season is in full swing and March Madness is officially here. Selection Sunday was yesterday as we're recording this. And schools, they're making their way into the tournament. They're trying to, you know, figure this out. I'm trying to figure out who I'm going to pick other than I know Florida State. What's that?
I said, shout out to Cleveland State, baby.
Are you guys in? I honestly haven't even looked at the brackets. I just know Florida State's in.
Champs, man. Act like you know.
Hey, look, I don't know because I haven't watched
much. I'm going to let you know. The Horizon League champs is none other than my alma mater, the Cleveland State University.
Well, I hope you're not in the same bracket as Florida State, because last time we played you guys, we discussed on this podcast what happened. It wasn't good for Florida State. It was not good for Florida State. So I hope that doesn't happen again. But look, the tournament is about to start. So the $100,000 Bracket Madness contest as BetOnline is the spot to be for all your bracketology needs. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets and is free to sign up. So head to the website betonline.ag or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus for your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook expert. Man, Norris, I had some trouble getting through that one, huh?
Man, that was tough.
I was struggling to get through it.
Hey, call it March Madness.
It's March Madness, man. I got myself all twisted up on that read, man. That was something.
This March Madness for everybody. It's all good.
It's all good. It's that time of year. But hey, look, you know what else? It was daylight savings last night. I didn't even know. I lost an hour of sleep. I didn't even know. Maybe that's what it is. I need an extra hour. I'll take a nap after we record this. But also, more importantly, I'm not talking about college, but I'm not a college basketball guy. Let's talk about the Heat. We got to talk about Jimmy. That is my look. The Heat have won. Everyone's talking about they've won 9 of their last 10 or 10 of their last 11 or 14 of the last, however you want to put it. They are on an absolute tear. They've won dating back to before the break. They've won 4 in a row since coming back from all, no, excuse me, 3 in a row since the break, 4 in a row dating back to before the break. It's just since Jimmy Butler came back, this team is, like you said, there are very few teams on the planet doing what the Miami Heat are doing right now. And I know you don't want to discuss the MVP thing. I know you don't. But there's, when you look at what Jimmy Butler's done since he's come back, the Heat, they're 15-6 since he's come back. That's the third best win percentage in that time frame. There's only two teams with a better win percentage in that time frame: the Suns and the Nets. The Nets are the best team in the East right now. And the Suns very, very well might end up with the best record in the West. They are playing out of their mind. The Heat are the only team. They're right behind them, and they're barely behind the Nets in win percentage. And it is a direct correlation with what Jimmy Butler has been doing, especially over the last 6 to 7 games that he's played. It's been even on a higher level. It's absurd.
Yeah, Jimmy is on a tear right now, man. He's playing the best basketball so far he's played this whole season, which the team definitely needs at this point. He's definitely our most valuable player, no question. It's a little early for me to, you know, I don't want to jinx anything. I just want things to keep going the way they're going. Keep playing, you know, high level basketball. And then at the end, you know, we can discuss that, you know, because, you know, the MVP is not just about, you know, the last few games, last month or so. It's about, you know, the whole season. And obviously, he kind of struggled to start the season. So I just want him to continue finishing the season strong, playing like this. Then I'll feel more comfortable, you know, saying, you know, he needs to be in that MVP discussion. But it's definitely no question he's playing MVP caliber basketball at this point in time.
Yeah, well, and I think it's interesting because I want to know, because we had very heated discussion about MVPs and what the award means, right? Mm-hmm. And I think when you look at the last 6 games that Jimmy Butler's played, he's averaging 30 points a game, 9 assists, 6.5 rebounds, 3 steals, and he's shooting almost 30% from 3, which is a big deal for him. It's a big deal.
It is.
And we talk about value, right? I think the fact that he missed all those games and now the Heat are playing the way they're playing makes him a more valuable player than a number of guys who are being considered. Like, for example, I was on BetOnline earlier today and I was looking at the MVP odds. He's not in there. He's not even listed. I'm on basketballreference.com's MVP tracker. They track the top 10 guys for who they think is in that running for MVP. He's not on the list. That seems a little bit, for the way he's playing this year and the way they've played, particularly since January 30th, since he came back, I feel like he gets left out of All-Star. Understandably, they have struggled because of the games he missed. But the way he's played over the last 21, 22 games, they're already halfway through the season after 37 games. I think it might be time to actually start getting him in that conversation, dude. Not that he's there, because he still has to continue to do it. But like you said, he's playing MVP basketball.
Yeah, let's just leave it at this. He's playing at MVP level right now. I feel very comfortable saying that. And if he can continue this throughout the remainder of the season, I believe that his name will be in there in that discussion. But, you know, some guys have been doing it the whole season, and I don't want to discredit any of what they're doing. You know, Joel Embiid, even though he's hurt now, you know, James Harden, LeBron, you know, the Joker. You know, there's some guys that's having, you know, great seasons. But Jimmy, at this point in time, is playing second to nobody. He's playing right at the top of the league right now.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing that you mentioned, those guys that you mentioned, right, is so like Embiid, now we got to see what happens because the injury. Because they're playing so well that I don't think he's playing anytime soon, even if the injury is better, because they need him fresh for the playoffs. You saw their last game, they won by 35 and he didn't even play. LeBron will be interesting because the Lakers have not been as good since AD went down. So we'll see if people knock LeBron on that. And I just, the Harden, I understand what people are saying about Harden, but I still think with Harden, part of the reason why people are so high on what Harden is doing is because in the back of their minds, they know KD's coming back. Because he's not doing much different than what he was doing in Houston. But now they think he has a chance to win it.
Well, he's playing a different style now, though, that's more respectable. He's not dribbling the air out of the ball, you know, 35 dribbles. You know, he's creating great assists. He's efficient. You know, he has a great thing going with Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving has been playing.
He's having the best year of his career, I think.
Yeah, so, the James Harden, you know, his complete game, he's not playing the same way as he was in Houston. I believe that's why, you know, a lot more people are feeling good about, you know, mentioning him in the MVP discussion, especially playing in Brooklyn. It's a bigger market. There's more eyes watching, getting to see what he's doing. And obviously the Joker.
Yeah, he's having an incredible year. They've been struggling lately, but statistically, that's where it becomes – value over statistics, right? And also, like, it's almost seems like the target changes year to year with the award. So when Russ won it, that team was a 6 seed. So it wasn't the best player on the best team. It was the best statistical historic season. But then with Giannis won it twice because he was the best player on the best team.
Yeah, but even though in those years, Russell Westbrook averaged a triple-double. It wasn't
I know that was a historic season, right?
Yeah, it wasn't just about stats. It was a historic season. He took a team that had just lost the second best player in the world and kept them relevant. Normally, when that happens, the team is under. That team is in the lottery. He kept that team relevant and then had a historic season, which hadn't been done since, 40 years prior. So, you know, that was special circumstances.
Yeah.
And then with Giannis, you know, obviously he had great statistics on the number one team, like you said, but he was actually playing most valuable, you know, that at least that first one. That second one could have went, you know, another way. But that first year when Giannis won MVP, he definitely was the MVP of valuable. I mean, because he led his team in almost every category. He played all the positions. He defended at a high level. No, he was definitely most valuable. But like you said, sometimes people change the narrative. Is it about stats this year? Is it the best player on best team? Is it a little bit of both? To me, it has to be a little bit of both.
Yep.
You can't have low stats, but because your value, you know, you get to be MVP. Or you can't have extremely high stats, but your team, you know, is irrelevant. You know, they stink. You know, that too as well. So
right. And it's like the other night on TNT. They were arguing whether Chris Paul should be in consideration. It's like, come on. I mean, like, no, this is nothing against Chris Paul. That team, I think, is going to end up with the best record in the NBA. I think just because of circumstances, the Clippers team tend to blow games. Utah has regressed in a big way. They've lost 4 of their last 6. The Lakers, who knows with AD, what their regular season, but the Suns are just starting to hit their peak now. And a lot of that is them getting Chris Paul. So from a totally value standpoint, I understand it, but he's averaging 16 points a game. So can you give a guy, you can't be in the conversation with those kind of numbers, can you?
Yeah, I mean,
I know Steve Nash did it, but there's Nash a lot of people who don't, there's a lot of people who don't think he deserved those.
And you know, for good reason, you know, it's hard to get him the MVP. Even though he was a great player, it's hard to say he was more valuable than Shaq and Kobe and LeBron. That was kind of crazy. But his team did beat those teams. And he shot 50-40-90, which is amazing, especially for a point guard, you know, to be able to, you know, at the pace to which they were playing. He was like the quarterback of those teams. So, but this is different, though. Chris Paul is different. He has Devin Booker, who's averaging 25 points a game.
I like that team.
So he's a very valuable piece to that team, but to say he's most valuable, over like the Joker or LeBron or Embiid and them who have to carry the load scoring and assisting and defensively. I just can't, you know, I can't say Chris Paul should be in that yeah. discussion, but he's definitely a great leader. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's unbelievable the way he teams, regardless of what they say about him in the playoffs, his teams win and they get to the playoffs every year. And he changes the dynamic of a team. But with Jimmy, it'll be fascinating. I think if he can, like we said, he's got to continue to play this way. And he's kept it up since he came back. And I'll tell you what's even more remarkable, and we talked about this a little bit before we started the show, is that in this stretch, since he came back, the Heat have the best defense in the NBA. And that mm-hmm. is obviously in big part to Jimmy Butler's credit because of what he brings to the team. But the fact that he's averaging 22 a game on the season over these last six games or so, averaging 30 a game, legitimately putting this team on his back because the offense looks so bad right now. And it makes what he's doing even more impressive because they shouldn't. I mean, really, they are hot and they are winning a lot of games. They're probably squeaking by the skin of their teeth because of the way the offense looks right now.
Yeah, Jimmy, it's amazing how he just turned it up. Remember mm-hmm. how you was on him about not being aggressive?
I always have been.
Yeah, and it's like he heard you and he was like, you know what, let me show what I can do, man. Because he's turned it up in all facets of the game. And with Bam being, you know, sideline right now, we may need him to even turn it up to another notch.
It's, yeah, well, so Bam is probable, I believe, to play Tuesday night against the Cavs. We'll see. I personally wouldn't play him because it's the Cavs.
Cavs. You know, don't want to take no chances. Nothing against the Cavs, but we don't. You know, we got long term goals we got going here.
Right. But you see so outside of Jimmy, right? Since he's come back, he's played great, but the offense still, right? The offense has gotten a little better. They're 20th in offensive rating in that stretch, 25th on the season, 23rd in 3-point shooting in that stretch, 26th on the season, but they're 26th. And points in the paint on the season and during that stretch. I think I harp on this a lot, but it's starting mm-hmm. now to really stick out, right? The reliance on the 3-point shot, because last year they were second or third in the league all year in 3-point shooting. So they're doing a lot of the same things they did last year. It's just not working because they are not making shots.
Yeah, it's tough when you're struggling to score in the paint and struggling from three. It's like, where's your offense going to come from? So mm-hmm. it's amazing. It's amazing that they're even playing this well while still struggling from three and struggling to get paint points. That just shows you the resilience and how valuable their defense has been. And, you know, we got a good schedule, you know, after All-Star break. This is a pretty good schedule. So I believe that helped. But we got to address this 3-point shooting, man. I think sometimes, you know, the NBA as a whole relies too much on 3-point shooting. The point is to score. That's the whole point. The point is to score. And if you're not a great 3-point shooting team, that's okay. You just need to make timely threes and shoot for percentage. If you can make timely threes and shoot a high percentage, you know, I believe that that's better than a team shooting mostly threes and shooting a lower percentage, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the rhythm of the offense will be better that way as well.
Yep. And for example, we brought up Phoenix. That's a team mm-hmm. that I've said on another podcast, I think they'll finish the season with the best record just because of the way they're playing. And I think the way things shake out, that doesn't mean I think they're going to win a championship. I just think regular season, they could finish with the best record. They're playing great basketball. They take the 16th most threes per game in the NBA. And they have one of the best shooters in the NBA. They have Devin Booker.
They make timely threes.
Right. They get into their spots. And to your point that you made a couple episodes ago about the mid-range game, you might not find a better backcourt in terms of just mid-range play. Chris Paul and Devin Booker are killers in the mid-range.
Mid-range killers.
And you know, Goran Dragic, Jimmy Butler, and Tyler Hero, they all have that in their game. It's just they don't take advantage of the mid-range. And then there's so many times, and I've harped on this with Jimmy Butler, but it happens with all of them, they get into the paint and then kick it out when they have opportunities to either get fouled or score in the paint. They're just constantly looking. I love Duncan Robinson. They're still forcing it. They're still forcing the issue with him.
Yeah. And they gotta stop doing that. Dude, I mean, I don't know no other way to say it. Normally, yeah. You know, I'm like, they gotta work the process, keep working it. But at this point, no, when you get 2 feet in the paint, unless two or three people are on you, then you kick it out. But if it's one-on-one and you in the paint, you're better off getting a shot up. And then you mm-hmm. have a chance to get a rebound. And then when you get the rebound, you can kick out for three because, yep. you know, it's a scramble on the rebound. But to just be driving it in, kicking it out for contested threes, because if you watch, a lot of these shots are not wide open threes. You know, Duncan Robinson, they're draped all over him. And he's still, you know, catching and shooting them, which that's his job to do. But, you know, when you break a guy down or break the defense down, get 2 feet in the paint, like you said, you know, you got to get a shot, get shots on goal, man. Because if you shoot and miss, that's zero. But if you shoot and miss and get the rebound, make it, that's 50% you're shooting now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think we're better off, you know, trying that, you know, to get some improvement on offense. But I think it's hard for the Heat to see that right now because they're still winning.
Yeah, I know. It's so wild. I mean, it's like, it seems like just a philosophy. I don't know if it's a philosophy or what, but you know, like in the, not this last Orlando game, but the first, they played Orlando twice since the break in the first game, mm-hmm. For back from break, Jimmy Butler, he got a steal and he had a fast break where he was, I think the guy, I don't even know who it was, but most of Orlando's guys that are playing right now are not their top guys because they're all hurt. So he had a one-on-one on the break. He could have, and there's very few guys in the NBA, even the best guys, that can guard Jimmy one-on-one, especially in transition. He right. could have gone right at this dude, got a foul, got a bucket, whatever. He turns around and just hands it back to Duncan Robinson for a transition three. It's just like, maybe I'm a little old school about this stuff, but a transition three, when you have a one-on-one with one of the best one-on-one scores at the rim in the NBA, it seems like like something that, and I can never knock Spo, because what Spo's doing with this team right now is incredible, but come on, like, right. wouldn't you as a coach, maybe this is just the way he coaches Jimmy. He's like, hey, if Jimmy's playing this way, I'm going to let Jimmy do what he does. If that's the decision he wants to make, let him make it. But wouldn't you at some point be like, Jimmy, score, go to the rim.
In the situation that they're in right now, I would say, yes, you got to tell them to be more aggressive because they're struggling so much from three and you can't force it. Mm-hmm. You can't be like, oh, well, I'm just going to keep shooting and shooting and shooting and forcing it. Like, yeah, you can. You want your shooters to keep shooting, but the guys who are making the plays for the shooters have to be more aggressive, maybe to score, take some of the pressure off those shooters. Mm-hmm. And so instead of maybe him shooting 10 threes in a game, maybe he only shoots five or six, but his percentage might go up, you know?
Yeah.
But like I said, it's hard for them to see that right now because they're still winning. When they start playing against, you know, tougher competition, you know, it'll probably be a little bit more obvious, or by that time, hopefully they're shooting the ball better in a better rhythm.
Well, that's what so you think it's probably partially like the mindset on their end is like, we're still winning and eventually the shots will fall.
I'm for sure that's the mindset.
Yeah,
because you can't ask Duncan to stop shooting, but that's what he does.
Right.
And you're not going all of a sudden mid-season change your offense totally around. So what you can do is make little tweaks within the offense. And so when you're driving, you know, you still look for your shooters, but also take a look at that basket. You know, take a look at drawing those fouls. Take a look at getting a shot up on the rim and then crashing the offensive boards.
Yeah,
because I think you know, because getting to the free throw line can help with shooting.
Right.
If you attack the paint, you know, and get some shots on goal and draw some fouls, then you get some free throws. Then that 3-point shot looks a little bit more easy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, we've talked about the defense and how amazing and how basic they're winning games because of their defense.
Absolutely.
And I think part of why they've been able – the defense has been great, but I think even a lot of great defensive teams might not be able to overcome the way this offense is playing. But part of why they have is, you know how there's that thing with, you know, like when the Warriors were great, there was that point in the fourth or late in the second half or the fourth where it was just like, all right, it's time to go. We're going to beat you down right now. Like it's over. And great teams do that. They're not doing that off right now, though. that's what the Heat's defense is accomplishing. And again, I'll point to since January 30th when Jimmy Butler came back.
Mm-hmm.
Second least opponent points in the fourth quarter in the NBA, only behind the Lakers.
The Lakers, absolutely.
11-4 in clutch games since Jimmy came back, which is games within 5 points with 5 minutes to go. 11-4. Mm-hmm. And since January 30th, the Heat have the best defensive rating in the league at 106 points per possession for their defense. In clutch time, that goes all the way down to 93. So there's something about this team that not only are they playing great defense just in games, but it seems like when it matters, which is that fourth quarter and those clutch times, there's this switch now where it's like, all right, time to win and do what we do, which is you're not scoring points. You're just not scoring.
I think that's just it's organic to the habits that they've built. To know, I have to give a major credit to Spo and his, you know, their strategy, but you also have to give credit to the players of buckling down. Because not many teams in the NBA take defense that serious. Mm-hmm. Obviously, as you can tell by how many points have been being scored. But I also have to say this: when you know that you're struggling on offense, if you want to win, what does that automatically mean you have to do? You have to automatically mean, oh, I got to turn up the defense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just been organic with the Heat. It's like, okay, we're struggling offensively, but if we can keep the score down and keep the game close, we still have a chance to win. So I think because they're struggling so much on the offensive end to score percentage-wise, I believe it automatically the team knows, okay, if we want to win, we got to shut teams down.
Mm-hmm. And it's pretty incredible. Like even with Bam out, it's continued. And, you know, we were talking earlier in the year where Bam was maybe going to play his way into consideration for a defensive player of the year type of year. But even with mm-hmm. him out, the defense has been, and now again, granted, like you said, easy schedule after the break, but you still got to do it. It's like, we always talk about these things where, and you know this firsthand, right? We talked about strength of schedule in the second half, or we talk about, oh, well, they played an easy schedule. Doesn't mean you do it every night. But in my estimation, from when I was working in the league and scouting, it is much harder night in and night out to play lockdown defense than it is to go out and put up 120 a night.
Yeah, it's definitely easier to go out there and put up 120 than to have the mental fortitude and the energy and desire to lock down every night. And even though the schedule has been favorable, these are still NBA players at the end of the day. And so, you know, you have to respect all of your opponents. And right now they're giving the proper respect to everybody because they're locking up everybody. They played well on the West Coast trip defensively. And then they came back after the break and have been taking care of business on the East Coast. So we can't say that it's only because of their strength of schedule, but these teams have, I don't want to say they've made it easier after the break, but we definitely have a favorable schedule after the break.
Orlando for sure. Orlando for sure. I'll tell you, Chicago is pretty good this year. Chicago is going to be, if they're not in the top eight, they're going to be in that play-in situation. They'll be in the top 10. They've actually had a really, you know, interestingly, I know you don't gamble, but they are, I want to say, third in the NBA in terms of their record against the spread, meaning whether they are favorites or underdogs, they are keeping games close all year. And that's, I've always thought, like when I was, you know, looking at teams, that's the sign of a team that is just, they're not there in terms of being a competitive playoff team, but they're on the brink, right? They're the fact that they're competing in every game means they may not be there yet, but they're like a year or two away from being a good competitive team. And I think what was the final score of that one? Miami held them to 90.
I'm about to say held them to 90 points. And, you know, they have some of the best young talent in the league.
Chicago. Zach LaVine.
Whew. Yeah, they have. I mean, and I can't pronounce his name.
Markkanen.
And it's another one.
Well, their whole team.
He just got drafted last year.
Well, Pat, Kobe White, who they actually benched the other night. He's now coming off the bench now.
Shot blocker.
I'm talking about the
shot Wendell
blocker.
Carter.
Wendell Carter.
Yep. He also got put. They're coming off the bench now. They Billy Donovan put Thaddeus Young in the starting lineup. Yeah. And then Patrick Williams, the kid from Florida State, who they drafted fourth overall, looks really good for them.
Absolutely. And
so they have, but Zach LaVine, there are not a lot of, I'll tell you what, I'm glad he made the All-Star game this year and people get to see, because there are not a lot of guys in the NBA who can do the things, at least offensively, that he can do. He is about as dynamic a scorer as there is.
What you call the offensive juggernaut right now.
And I tell you, I've mentioned this on other shows. One of the most competitive players I've ever seen in a draft workout when he came and worked out for us in Charlotte. Because mm-hmm. you know how these draft workouts can be. You go to a bunch of them. You don't always, do you want to compete? Do you not? That dude, he wanted to win. He wanted to win the drill. Like any drill, I think it was like four or five guys, and he was out there mm-hmm. trying to kill people. And I'll always remember that with certain guys, because it's like not everyone wants that. Not everybody's out there trying to be a killer in those situations.
Well, I was the same way, so I definitely understand that. I want to kill anything moving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a pretty interesting situation when you go into. How many teams did you work out for before the draft?
11.
11.
Yeah,
and you went. Workers. What pick did you end up going?
The 28th pick in the first round.
28th pick. So 11. Yep. Did you mostly work out like bottom half of the first teams, or did you work out for any of the earlier teams?
I worked out for everyone, I think, from pick 17 to lottery on down, from the lottery on down. So I worked out for Chicago, Boston, San Antonio, Miami, Houston. I think I did a Lakers, Portland, and
I'm guessing you didn't work out for any of the teams. I think when you probably were
the Knicks in Charlotte.
That was a year before I got to Charlotte, though. I was in Memphis that year. I know we're getting a little off topic, but this is interesting stuff to me. Could you tell, like, for example, I'll bring Charlotte into this. Could you tell as a young guy, as a college kid, going around to organizations, and you don't have to talk about any specifics, but could you tell, like, okay, this is the kind of place I want to be. I don't know what's happening here right now. Like, this is just sort of like, what's the deal? Like, I don't know that I want to be, like, when you went to the workouts, could you sort of tell, like, for example, Miami, were you like, yeah, these guys, I mean, it's Miami, so they kind of have.
I could tell like how structured the team was, as far as I could just tell by how intense they are. But I didn't know if it was going to be a good city or if it's a well-run organization right. or not. I could tell, but I could tell by the differences in the workout, the philosophy of the teams and how they thought. Like, I knew the Miami Heat was a tough – they like tough guys. I could tell by that workout that they
gassed you, right?
They're not looking to do a bunch of – of course, they're going to test your skill level, but they also want to test your mental – they want to test your mental and physical fortitude. So – they didn't just want to see you make 10 for 10. They wanted to get you tired and then see if you can make 10 for 10. Mm-hmm. They didn't just want us to play one-on-one. They wanted us to play one-on-one half court, one-on-one three-quarter court, one-on-one full court to see what it's like when you're gassed, when you're tired, to see what type of heart you have. Because they know if you can play or not already. But the only way to tell the difference is, okay, how does he play when he's tired? How does he play when I make him do something that he doesn't feel comfortable doing? Like, in my workout, personally, Pat Riley came out there and was like, we was playing at one-on-one at the three-point line. Then he walked – we was playing one-on-one half court. And then he got up and walked out there, took the ball, and said, give me the ball. He said, anybody can do that. He took the ball and placed the ball down at the other free throw line and said, we're going to play one-on-one from right here. And you should have seen everybody's faces. The other players was like – and I was like, bring it. I was like, I can play one-on-one. That's from right here. I'm going to defend full court, you know.
Hell
I'm
yeah.
like, bring it. And that's and so, and you know, they notice stuff like that. And so when you go around to all these different teams, you can tell by their workouts, you know, what their philosophy is as far as what they're looking for in a player.
That's a great Pat Riley. That's a great Heat workout story.
Oh, yeah.
Who, when you're the, this is the last one, because this is just for me, because I want to know, because I was, who did Larry Brown do your workout in Charlotte?
No, no, he didn't do the workout.
Because I was MJ with him.
MJ happened to be there. I was so happy that MJ came to the workout.
Did they make you palm the balls? Did they make you palm the two basketballs in front of MJ? That's a thing, you know, in Charlotte.
No, they didn't make us do that. I mean, but I had no problem. But they didn't make us do that. But it was in my workout. It was, I think it was me, maybe Klay Thompson and Josh Shelby. We were the three. And then it was a couple local guys.
Forgot about Josh. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was a good workout. It was a competitive workout.
Yeah, that's cool. We'll do more stories like that as we go on, for sure. By the way, I forgot to mention, everybody, if you want to hear more stories like that, go leave your questions for the mailbag episode that we're going to do soon, and we'll get to that stuff, because I know everybody loves hearing those old stories. All right, let's get back to the Heat, because I have to give praise. Got to give credit where credit's due. It first, I got to praise someone else, and that's our sponsor, eBay. Right, you got to praise eBay. Because whether it's rare, dead stock, or the latest release, you can find the exact shoe you're looking for. As the original sneaker marketplace, eBay is the place to go to cop the pair you've been eyeing. With eBay's authenticity guarantee, your sneakers are meticulously inspected by independent professional authenticators. A team of experienced sneaker authenticators verify the box, the logo, the stitching, and dozens of other inspection points. Each sneaker also receives an authenticity guarantee tag that includes a digital stamp of authenticity, and it also protects sellers with a verified return process. And for sneaker sellers out there, eBay has eliminated selling fees on sneakers $100 or more, making it free to sell or flip your collection. So go to ebay.com/sneakers today. eBay, the world's best destination for discovering great value and unique selection. That was better.
Shout out to eBay.
Yeah, that's a lot better. And shout out, I actually have this written in my notes. Shout out to Kelly Olynyk. Because
Kelly, yo, baby.
Because since over these last four games, since Bam Adebayo has been sitting, Kelly Olynyk, the five man, has thrived for Miami at last four games, averaging 16 a game, 8.3 rebounds, 4 assists, 1.8 steals, a block, and most importantly, Norris, 52% from three over these last four games. I think our guy, with all the rumors and everything that's going on now, no one's untouchable in that position, but right, it seems like he may have solidified himself over these last few games, at least to be the backup five for the rest of the year once they make a move to get another four.
I'm about to say he's playing really well, and I think part of that's because he's playing the five. Yeah, you know, I believe that has something to do with it. He's playing the five, not purposefully. Obviously, it's because Bam has been out, but maybe we found something with him having to, you know, play the five more instead of the four.
Well, you remember last year in the playoffs when Bam got hurt, some of the best basketball Kelly Olynyk played in the bubble was when Bam was out and Kelly had to play more of, and he was also more of a backup five last year because they had Jay Crowder and Derek Jones Jr. and other guys who could play that stretch four spot. Kelly was, and especially after Myers Leonard was basically benched, Kelly O was basically the backup five. So, yeah, you know, this really probably is more of what his role is. So I will say, got to have him. Like, he's playing great basketball, but I also think it does kind of emphasize that they still need to probably go get that other guy, whoever it is.
Yeah, I think how he's been playing recently shows that, and like you said, how he played in the bubble for the Heat. I think him playing the backup five is probably better for his production than him playing all four, because when he was playing the four this year, obviously he struggled tremendously. Playing the five is a little bit different. You know, it's a different guy guarding you. You're in a different, you know, different spot sometimes on the offense, and it's harder to close out. It's harder for five men to help and then close out on shooters like Kelly O. Because even though he's playing the five, he still spaces the floor out, and so that's a mismatch for a lot of five men.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. I was looking through all these stats for the Heat. I got to the on off court splits. So mm-hmm. looking at the stats when guys are team stats, when guys are on the court and when they're off the court. And this actually blew my mind. There's no way any of us could have looked and been like, this is a stat that exists. When Kelly Olynyk's on the floor this year, when he's on the floor, Miami's offensive rating is 111, which is the best that their offensive rating is for any individual player on the floor. When he's off the floor, that drops all the way down to 100. It drops by 11 points. And it's when he's off the floor, their offense is the worst of any individual player when they're off the floor.
Wow.
Isn't that kind of crazy to think about?
That is crazy. And sometimes numbers can lie, but that number right there saying that maybe because just the threat of him being out there spacing the floor, you know, creates lanes for others. But I can't believe that stat, especially, you know, knowing how bad he was struggling, man, that's a pretty remarkable stat.
Yeah. Now I think to your point, his backup this year at the four has been Andre Iguodala, and his offensive rating when he's on the floor is pretty atrocious right now. So yeah, I think part of it is, exactly. And I think you make a great point of just the threat of having a guy out there who can shoot the ball. It spreads the offense when Andre Iguodala is out there, not so much. And by the way, when Iguodala is off the floor, it's the best that the Heat's offensive rating is for any individual player. So maybe that's where that sort of comes in. Again, an emphasis on why they need to go out and get another four to bolster that position.
Absolutely. Definitely. That kind of solidifies that they definitely need another four, man, if they want to be in serious contention.
Well, the good news is that almost immediately after last week's episode, a four man came available. And since then, another four man came available. And we've talked about both of these four men a lot on this episode, but now they are officially available in some way or another. LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yes, sir.
PJ Tucker.
Yes, sir.
Now, very drastically different situations for these two guys.
Yeah.
Because they're both in their last year of their deal. So that's one thing. LaMarcus Aldridge makes $24 million. PJ Tucker only makes $7 million. So to get these things done, it's different situations. Reportedly, the Heat made or at least broached an offer of basically sending a bunch of their expiring deals. I think it was Myers Leonard, Mo Harkless, and Avery Bradley for LaMarcus Aldridge. And then like throw in like a Chris Silver or something like that. I it doesn't sound like the Spurs were into it or that it's happening, but that's reportedly what they sort of dangled out there to try to get him. And now what they're saying today, or that what's been coming out now, is that I think it was the Heat, the Celtics, and one other team are now favorites to land Aldridge. Heat, Blazers, Celtics are leading candidates to sign him if he gets bought out. Because $24 million, there's not a lot of teams that can make $24 million work and give the Spurs back something that they actually want.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to even talk about the money side. I'm going to talk about which one probably fits better. I believe LaMarcus obviously automatically upgrades your offense, but your defense is going to take a hit, period. Your defense is going to take a drastic hit. PJ Tucker, I feel like he will fit in seamlessly. Like, he'll fit in right away just by the way he plays. He's going to space the floor at corner three. He can defend one through four and even some fives, you know. And if the Heat are trying to do what I believe they're trying to do, which is, you know, every year trying to compete at the highest level, going against teams like Philly and going against teams like the Celtics and like the Nets, you got to have multiple 3-and-D guys that could defend, you know, wing players, guys that can defend James Harden, you know, Kyrie Irving, Joe Harris, Kevin Durant. You got to have bodies that are willing to defend these type of guys, multiple people. You know, you can't just think Jimmy is going to guard the whole world. And so I believe PJ Tucker will fit right in with being able to defend at a high level and still space the floor and shoot. With LaMarcus, you know, you kind of have to design the offense a little bit around his skill set because he can shoot the three a little bit, but he still catch the ball on the left wing ISO. That's his go-to. And he's elite. He's very elite at that.
Yeah.
And so I don't believe you bring him in for him not to play his game. And so I believe PJ Tucker will fit in easier than, let's say, a LaMarcus Aldridge.
And also, we talked about it last week when we talked about PJ Tucker. When he is at his best, he's one of the best corner three-point shooters in the NBA. And for some reason, when I watch PJ, and it's probably partially because, you know, LaMarcus is, he's a little bigger. He's been the focal point of a lot of teams. He's probably played more minutes over his career. PJ seems a little fresher, even though they're the same age. Like, it seems like PJ has a little more in the tank at this point in his career than Aldridge does, but they're the same age. They're both 35.
Yeah, but they play different. You got to think, right. LaMarcus was the face of a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of wear and tear in your body. You know, he's been the number one option for a long time in his career. So he's a little more probably beat up than PJ Tucker, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Even though PJ Tucker does a lot of dirty work, you know, a lot of effort and all of that. But when you're the face of a franchise and everything runs through you, that takes a toll on you. So that's probably why PJ, you know, he seems a little fresher, a little more athletic, you know, and I believe that's why he would probably be a better fit.
Yeah. Here's what I think. Here's what I think that here's what the perfect scenario is. Perfect scenario. Trade for PJ Tucker. Now they've said that the Rockets want a young player in return. I don't know what that means in terms of the Heat. Cause you know, then you start to get into the question of like, are you willing to give up a Kendrick Nunn to get a PJ Tucker? Because what other young player are you giving up to get a 35-year-old expiring contract? Tough. That's a tough one. But let's just say maybe they can give up like a pick and give up $7 million worth. They go trade for PJ Tucker, then just hold out and hope that no one wants to give up $24 million worth of money to get LaMarcus Aldridge and he gets bought out. Come on down, LaMarcus Aldridge. We'll sign you for the vet minimum too. Come on now.
That's a crazy scenario right there.
Hey, I think LaMarcus Aldridge there was discussions, I believe, about him potentially coming down to Miami at a point before he ended up in San Antonio. So
it was.
So
I'm not sure if his personality is a Miami Heat personality though.
Interesting.
And because, you know, it takes a special player. You know, it's not about just coming to Miami, because obviously the city of Miami is great to live in, no great weather, tax free and all that. But when you show up to work, the Miami Heat is blue collar. You know, put your heart, come to work, weight and body fat, you know, check-ins. You know, it's a certain discipline, it's a certain type of player that it takes to be able to wear that Heat uniform. Not everybody can do it, whether you're a star or not. Not everybody not everybody wants to deal with that, you know, that type of discipline. And so I'm not sure if he's the Miami Heat type of player, to be honest with you, but he'll have to make that decision. But from the outside looking in, it doesn't seem like his personality is a Miami Heat, Jimmy Butler, Pat Riley type of guy.
It is interesting because if the reason he wants to leave San Antonio is because he wants to go somewhere and win, and the teams that he is potentially that they're saying are the front runners are Portland, Boston, and Miami. It seems right now, obviously a little biased, but if I'm looking at those three teams right now, Miami seems in the best position. Boston is interesting. The young talent is undeniable. Just not sure that they're built right now to win the East because their depth is just non-existent. And then obviously Dame is Dame, but they ain't getting out of the West. And LaMarcus Aldridge is not putting you over. LaMarcus Aldridge is not at a point where he's putting a team over the top. He's just another, he's a nice piece to add to your rotation. So if he's trying to go somewhere to win, Miami seems like, if he gets bought out, I mean,
right.
I think PJ
Boston, I think he would help Boston a lot. Actually,
it's interesting because
pressure off those young guys. Somebody you can throw the ball into.
Yeah.
You know, slow things down. Then you got Tristan Thompson. That can free up Tristan to rebound.
It's true, too, because they really – he would bring back what they lost, at least offensively, when they got rid of Al Horford.
Absolutely.
You know, because that they really have not replaced that in any way. And that's been a big difference.
I believe he's better offensively than Al Horford.
I mean, I guess like at their peaks, right? Yeah, they were for sure.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I think, look, let's just hold out and let's go get PJ first.
Right, right.
And then if we get LaMarcus, then it's a bonus. But we also got to see, look, Houston is about to, they've lost 16 games in a row, dude. Like that team.
I feel bad.
Oh my God. That's my guy down there too. Steven Silas. That's my guy. I mean, I was with him for 5 years in Charlotte.
Shout out to Steven Silas, man. Keep up the good work. Better times are coming, brother.
Yeah, well, they're supposed to get Christian Wood back and this week, and they've lost 16 in a row since he got hurt. So let's go. Let's go, Christian Wood. Let's turn this thing around.
Speak about most valuable.
Oh, my God. Wow. Oh, my goodness. Wow. But that being said, that team is playing. I mean, they are really just going young. I mean, they brought up – they've been playing – so they have a lot of guys that I think could be on the move. Eric Gordon is a guy that people are targeting. Obviously, we know Vic and the rumors with him wanting to be in Miami. So who knows? Maybe it's a bit, maybe there's something bigger there. Like, because I wouldn't mind Eric Gordon. When you have a team that can't score, Eric Gordon will get you some buckets.
That's a fact. I played with Eric Gordon.
So
he definitely get a bucket.
So who knows? Maybe there's something a little bigger in store if you're talking about a team that's trying to fire sale their way into some young players and picks. So that's worth 10 days. Got 10 days, Pat. Let's see what Pat's got for us.
I'm about to say, you know, it's still a long time. 10 days is still a long time. Because, you know, sometimes 48 hours, magical things happen. So 10 days is a long time. So the Zen man, you know.
Yeah.
He'll figure it out.
It's interesting because I think normally – In a normal year, LaMarcus probably would have been traded already. I think Drummond would have been traded already. I think a lot of teams don't want to take on that kind of money in a COVID year where they're all losing money. So I think a lot of teams are trying to just hold out and say, we're not taking on a dude that's making $27 million, buy him out or we won't, you know, like, I just don't know that any of these guys are considered major impact guys. I guess you could say Drummond, but I still, you know, the jury's still out on his actual impact versus just his statistical output. So
how about this, bro? He's a walking double double.
He is, but I don't know if you saw, you probably didn't see this and you probably don't buy into it much, but there was like an anonymous executive was talking about him and said that he could get you 30 and 20 and have no impact on the game.
There's no way you can say that. I mean, obviously, some guys do put up big stats and they don't impact. Their team doesn't have a lot of success. But if a guy's averaging a double-double, that says two things. One, he has a motor. For him to be that active on the glass, that means, one, he has a motor. And then two, that means he has a hunger to play. You know, it takes a lot of energy to be down there banging and battling, getting rebounds and stuff like that. You know what I mean? So he has a motor and he's eager to rebound. Rebounding is a skill in this league, believe it or not.
Yeah, absolutely.
You need guys who can gain possession because you can't score without gaining possession of the ball. So, yeah, he may not be the number one option type of player. And maybe that's what that exec was meaning to say. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's not the number one option, but to say he can get you 30 and 20 and not impact winning, that's not. that's not right to say that, man.
All right, let's wrap it up here with the hashtag cold-blooded player of the week. I think I know where it's going. I think I know, because I know who I would give it to this week because I have to eat my words, but who you got?
So for the cold-blooded player of the week, one, I want to give a shout-out to Jimmy Butler for his MVP type of play. But for the cold-blooded player of the week, we got to go with our main man, Kelly O. We've been calling you out. We've been challenging you, especially my co-host. He's been on you heavy, bro. But you done came through for us this past week. So you're the cold-blooded player of the week. We want you to keep this play up because the Heat need it in the worst way.
Especially the 52% from three.
Especially that three ball.
Especially the three ball. All right, well, we got Cavs tomorrow night and then at Memphis, who's been a little up and down. And then back-to-back against the Pacers, who I wanted to, before we wrap up, point out those two games because I got to give a shout-out to Caris LeVert, who played on Saturday, his first game since he got traded and they found a cancerous mass that they removed. It's probably the best story in the NBA this year, the most incredible story going on in the NBA this year. This guy probably was not anticipating being traded, gets traded, and it probably potentially saved his life. They didn't know how bad it was going. It could have been. I don't think a lot of people knew whether he'd play this year because he had to have surgery to have it removed. And now he's back and he played and he looks a little slow, but he's been sitting. Obviously he's going to get back into shape, but I'll tell you what, he's still a bucket. As soon as he got in the game, he was scoring. Just shout out to that dude. Shout out to the Pacers for finding it. I think it's an incredible story. And that if he gets back to what he was in Brooklyn as a scorer, mm-hmm. watch out. Indy's dangerous again.
They are, man. I'm glad that he's back. Hopefully him and his family are okay now. Hopefully it doesn't come back. Shout out to LeVert, man.
Yeah. All right. So we'll be back next week. And hopefully this run, I think this run will keep going and Bam will be back and we'll keep it going. So Norris, you want to go ahead and take us out one more time?
Heat Nation. Another episode. Make sure you come back next week for more. And Kelly O, keep shooting that three ball, man.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.